Radio Influence. The future is now. You are sitting ringside with David Penzer on Radio Influence.
Welcome to another episode of Sitting Ringside. My name is David Penzer. We welcome you again to this unique thing that we call a podcast each and every week on the different platforms. And we want to remind you to follow us on Twitter at David Penzer. You could follow me there at Penzer Ringside. You could follow the show. And Mike Freeland is joining us this week. I know a lot of you, I could count on one hand, but there are some of you who are big fans of Mike, and just kidding about the one hand. And we wanted to bring...
Hey, you know, hold on a second there, Dave.
You're cutting me off.
I don't mean to be jumping in here, but I mean, I feel like, honestly, it's starting to grow. I think the more I'm gone, people start to long for me. You know what I mean?
Do you want to take another week off?
No, I maybe I should. These people are... I would use the phrase pining for me, but maybe that's not the proper...
So I'd let you just go and have them pine some more, but you're the guest this week.
So, I'm happy with that.
Instead of having you on every week, you know, we're going to have you on every few weeks and either talk about a pay-per-view, whether like we did the Survivor Series, and we'll do it for the Royal Rumble. And we're also going to, you know, talk about wrestling tidbits, what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. You could ask me if somebody's name comes up, I'll tell some stories about what happened behind the scenes in my career. And we're just going to chit chat for a while and see how it goes. Always trying new and unique stuff. So welcome, Mike. You're the guest this week. The associate producer is the guest. And so those who have pined to hear you must be excited that you're the star of the show.
Well, I tell you what, I have been getting hit up on Twitter recently, and a lot of people have been hitting me with those DMs going, where you been? What's going on? Are you okay? To everybody
How many?
There's a lot of DMs. People don't like their personal information to be released out there, but there's a lot. I mean, I got to charge my phone a lot. I do. It just gets drained.
You had your first meet and greet.
I had what?
You had your first meet and greet.
I did have my first meet and
greet.
Tell
us about that. You were so excited about that.
So here's the deal. Just kind of catch you all up on this one. So
yeah, because they're waiting with bated breath, but go ahead.
Right. There's a guy, a really, really nice individual out there who is a big supporter.
That's the first truthful thing you've said, that he's a very nice guy.
Let me get through this.
Okay.
A guy who's a big David Penzer fan, big WCW fan.
I don't know that he's a big David Penzer fan. I think I would say he's a fan of the show and a friend of the show.
I think he's a Penzer fan, and I can tell you this firsthand
because
he and I, we had a meet and greet. I did. I brought my 8.5x11s, and you know, I bought a couple of Sharpies with me, and everything worked out. So I normally, with my wife, we go up to Chicago. We typically go the weekend after Thanksgiving. Now, she's originally from Chicago, so some of her family's up there, some of her family's down here in Cincinnati, so obviously we have to kind of, you know, jig-jog our schedules to see them, and then obviously down here for the holidays.
What does this have to do with you meeting up with Trademark MMA?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. It's a slow process.
No, it's not.
But anyway, we went to a festival, a great German festival up there, and he and I were going back and forth on Twitter, and I remember him saying at one point, hey, I'm from Chicago, I'm in Chicago, and I thought, well, hell, why don't I just tell him I'm in town? And my wife did think that might have been taking a huge leap of faith, but I said, no, don't worry about it. I said, this is a good dude. This is my guy. And she said, okay, all right. So he meets us at the festival, super, super guy, Trademark MMA, Max is his name. I think I can give that information out. We talked a little bit about WCW, talked a little bit about the Monday Night Wars, how cool it was to, you know, live during that moment. He's a huge fan of that, huge WCW guy. And he just put over the show. He said he loves it. He loves the fact that his question got asked on air and that we've given him some plugs. And, no, just really, really grateful. We took a couple of pics. We did. We took some pics. I think
did he buy you like a beer or like a
I wish we could have had time for that. Unfortunately, we didn't. I had other things I had to take care of at the festival. So we just
had to bring him any baked goods.
I didn't. And I felt bad about that because I told him, I said, do you like lemon bars? You know? And I was like, just on the DL, you can tell me.
You didn't really say that, did you?
I did. Are you kidding me? I introduced him to Megapoos. I swear to God, the way I am right now with you is literally the way I am in person. There's no shtick. It's just who I am. So anyway, it's the lack of medication, but I digress.
Yeah,
no,
seriously.
Great guy. And he was like, man, I'm going to keep listening. You guys are great. I said, hey, brother, can we appreciate the support and the help on Twitter? And I said, next time I'm up in Chicago, let's do it up. Maybe hit a Cubs game or something like that. So yeah, we took a couple of pics and I posted a pic on my Twitter account.
I saw
of Max and I. So good dude. Really cool. First guy I've ever met. So I don't know if I can say he's a fan of mine. Like I have a fan or
he's a friend
it's
of the
more
show.
Of a fan of the show.
So. Friend of the show. Yeah. So
it was great.
Hope you're doing okay, Max. And he should have bought you a beer, but I'll talk to him that, or at least bring you some lemon bar. So
I did. I came empty handed. Right.
So these people don't listen to hear about your wacky adventures. So let's move on to wrestling. We're going to drop some tidbits, just things that are going on in the business. You were at SmackDown this past week, correct? Live.
Indeed. I was at SmackDown Live. They had it here in Cincinnati. I went with my best man from my wedding. The aforementioned horseman wedding. I was there with him and I enjoyed it. I had a good time. It was neat seeing a live show for the first time since my bachelor party. But I liked it. It was really cool.
So give me some thoughts about being at a live WWE television event.
They do a lot of video packages. I mean, tons of video packages, just promoting their products galore.
Yeah, they sort of, if I know what I'm talking about, and I think I do, they sort of take the place of what I used to do in between, you know, the matches and stuff like that. When I did the shows for WCW, their ring announcer, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't really talk much other than saying welcome to the show and then announcing the wrestlers.
Yeah, it's exactly right. He does not say a whole heck of a lot. I mean, he talks very little and then hops right off, and then they go to the matches. They a lot of packages, you know, building up to the match. But see, what I did not know was that the people in the ring actually look on the big screen and they actually see what the people at home are seeing, the package of maybe a feud leading up to their match. And then, you know, they turn the lights back on, they ring the bell, and they actually just go right into it. So I was not aware that they were seeing everything that you were seeing at home, which I thought was kind of cool. I like that.
In the middle of a match?
Not in the middle of a match, but before the match happens.
Right.
So who was pretty cool.
So who was over? Who was the most over?
Charlotte got a big pop. Huge.
Wow.
I wasn't
expecting you to say her, but she certainly deserves it.
She did. The Usos got a pretty nice pop too. Now I will say this. They did a segment that just kind of went on really long, and it was kind of like, oh gosh, less is more. They had a great yes chant when Daniel Bryant came out.
I would have thought you said got the biggest pop. You would say
it was close. It was close, but Charlotte, I mean, God, she was. It was pretty awesome. AJ Styles got a huge pop. I mean,
of course, yeah. I didn't watch the show. Was the chain come out or
no? No.
So no shame.
Right. But what I thought was really, really cool about it was they were doing the yep movement.
Yes.
Yeah, that the yep movement thing was really, really cool. Kevin Owens is just gold on the mic. I mean, that guy is just, I mean, I could listen to him all day. So it was a good show. It was a really good show. In the match after 205 Live, they actually did kind of a dark house show match, and it was Jinder Mahal versus AJ. And obviously just for the local crowd, but it was really good. It was a really good match. I did feel like the AJ in-ring stuff when the show started, when the Singh brothers came out, I think that went a little long. I could tell a lot of people were kind of waiting for that one to kind of wrap itself up. But overall, it's very theatrical. Very theatrical.
Off the top of your head, how many fans do you think they lost? I always wondered this. How many fans do you think they lost between the main event of SmackDown and when they did the dark match? How many people do you think 205 Live drives off?
Oh God, a ton.
Yeah.
In fact, people were,
and that's nothing against 205 Live. Those guys just aren't the name value yet of, you know, for the most part, other than maybe Enzo, than the top guys on SmackDown are.
Right. And it was funny because a lot of people, and I don't think the ushers were really enforcing this a whole lot. A lot of people were moving down, which, I mean, obviously I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because obviously it looks better, you know, down closer to the ring. But yeah, the minute that the main event for SmackDown ended, I mean, it was just like the floodgates had opened and a lot of people were just piecing out, but, yeah, we stayed, we watched it, and it was good.
Towards the end of WCW, when, you know, we could barely draw 2,000 people for Nitro, it was always a unique decision because you want the people that are in the cheap seats to move down, so you fill in the empty seats, but you don't want to, then you're really killing the town because people just know they could buy cheap seats and move down. So it was always that fine line you walked, usually towards the end of, especially when we were doing the Nitro Thunder double shots, live Nitro and then a taped Thunder, usually they would just say screw it at the end and ask everybody to move down. And, you know, you try to protect the town, but at the end of the day, when, you know, you'd rather have anything but empty seats, you know, just coming from the hard camera. So that was always the unique thing. Hey, speaking of Jinder Mahal, I have to eat some crow on this one. I spoke about for a long time. I defended the push of Jinder Mahal. I said that that they were going after a market, a huge market in India, 4 million people, and that it was worth people not liking him in the U.S. and other modern. So nothing against India, but other more modern wrestling countries. And, you know, I even spoke about, if you could do 5 shows in India of 100,000 people in a stadium, you could have 500,000 people in 5 nights. Boy, was I wrong, which probably explains why they killed his push when they did, because just found out that the house that he drew with him against Triple H on top on the one India shot, they were supposed to do 2 India shots and they canceled one. Only drew 9,000 people. So forget 100,000 people. I mean, 9,000 people is not a bad crowd, but you ain't getting over to the point where he was supposed to get over if you're only drawing 9,000 people in a dream match scenario against Triple H, you know, the biggest Indian star against Triple H, you know, one of the few legends who's still working house shows, live events once in a while. So I'm going to have to eat crow on that. I guess my son was right. Kids are usually right, I guess. I don't know. They say the parents are always right. But I still think that they should respect the Indian market. And I think maybe they could find somebody that has a little bit, you know, more charisma, I don't know, maybe a baby face, somebody who they don't know, that they could grow organically. They could get to that level down the road, but it certainly was going to take a lot longer than obviously they were willing to wait because they killed that thing dead. And now you know why. If you can't sell out an indoor arena against Triple H in your first appearance in India, then the whole thing isn't working. But hey, they gave it a try. It's more than Dixie Carter did when the idea was proposed to her by Kevin Sullivan. So,
well, the one thing I keep thinking about is, and you mentioned before, as far as, you know, tapping into a market that, you know, has a wealth of potential, do you ever feel like they had the same vision with Jinder Mahal that they had with the great Khali? I mean, do you think they had that? Well, wait a minute here, because I feel like Khali was more of an attraction than Jinder. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think that they were really playing at that point to the Indian market. I don't know that they were strong enough in the Indian market. I think Khali's just a freak and they like freaks and Vince likes freaks. And I don't say that in a negative way. He's just a very big guy and,
sure.
And extremely big face and, you know, that's a la Andre the Giant, even more than the Big Show. And, So I think that they just liked him as an attraction. I think he nailed it on the head. He was an attraction all over the world versus now I know he's a legend in India, probably more so because of, you know, stuff he's done in the movies and TV, the mainstream, than being in WWE. But I know he's pretty much royalty, the great Kali in India, and good for him. It's nice being over, so to speak. Speaking of Impact Wrestling, we mentioned of Dixie Carter. We've gotten some questions on social media because Impact Wrestling is returning to the Impact Zone in January, and I will not be ring announcing for Impact Wrestling anytime in the near future. Have great friends there, Scott Damore, who's going to come on this show once he gets things going up there, and him, and as most people know, him and Don Callis were hired and promoted to be on the executive committee. Both executive vice presidents report directly to Ed Nordholm from Anthem. And if anybody could do the job of getting that company to where it needs to be, I would say it's those two. But the cost cutting that they're doing is absolutely up and down everything and everybody. So yeah, I won't be back. They're using an in-house, somebody that gets a paycheck, somebody who's an employee of Impact that gets a paycheck doing other things behind the scenes, who has some ring announcing experience. So they're going to use them, and I wish them the best. Any questions on Impact Wrestling? I did have a long conversation with Scott Damore about a week ago. So if you have any questions that you think the fans would want to know, let me throw it out there, Mike.
Well, let me ask you this one thing. That, you know, there's a lot of things going on not only social media, you know, but a lot in the chat forums about basically Impact Wrestling being like a farm system for WWE at this point. And I guess what I mean by that is they can kind of hand pick who they want and then obviously bring them into NXT with already having a decent amount of experience and training already behind them. So it's not going to take them as long, or the learning curve isn't going to be as great to get them to maybe a main roster spot. And I was reading where Rockstar Spud, there is obviously rumors that he will be joining WWE soon.
He's a talented guy, by the way. I got all the time in the world for Rockstar Spud or whatever his new gimmick is. So kudos, Rockstar Spud. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. And what I was thinking is, you know, with Rockstar Spud, I thought he was a great performer. I really did. And I thought that he was great on the mic. What were your thoughts be if you were to drop Rockstar Spud into NXT?
Oh, I think he's going to 205 Live.
You think he would go straight there? Or
yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Okay. No, he's a very talented kid, go-getter. I first saw him for the first time when I did WrestleCade last November. Not this November, but the last November. And they did a battle royal, and he did a gimmick where he was hiding, sort of a Larry Zbyszko type gimmick, where he was hiding from everybody and trying to make deals and to try to be the last one to win the battle royal. And it was extremely entertaining, especially for an indie. Even that's a big indie show, they get like 4,000 people there. And battle royals usually stink, and you know there's a reason for that. But I told him afterwards. I pulled him aside. I said, "Dude, you made that battle royal. The stuff you were doing and the antics." And apparently a lot of that was his stuff. So I think the guy is very talented, and I think he'll be a great addition to WWE or NXT 205 Live, wherever he ends up going. As far as Impact goes, and look, you know, Scott didn't tell me a whole bunch of behind the scenes thing, but basically they're going to run it as a business, and the business only makes a certain amount of money. They get TV right money from India. They get TV right money from England. They get a little bit of revenue share from Pop TV. They kind of know what they're bringing in until they could find a paying partner in the U.S. They kind of know what they got from the existing contracts, and they've kind of been running on a whim and a prayer, hoping to, you know, lose money to be able to find a partner in the in the U.S. or to find the next big thing, you know, wrestler or angle to try to get it to make money, more money than they're taking in. And I think that Anthem has finally realized that they have to run it as a business. So, and I'm just totally making up a number. I have no idea what the number is, but it's probably not that much, but it might be a lot more. I don't know. But if they're bringing in $10 million in revenue from sponsors, I'm just throwing it out there. I have no idea. It could be way less. It could be probably way less, but it could be way more. Then they're not going to spend, you know, more than that amount of money. You know, they got to stop the bleeding. So, you know, a lot of budget cuts. I see that Dave Sahadi is no longer with them. He has been the director since the first time I was there, and the former WWE guy, sort of a Jeff Jarrett guy, even though Jeff's no longer there. And Raphael Morphy, who's sort of a behind-the-scenes type guy, I mentioned in the end of the last show about some Legends of Wrestling events coming back up in different cities in the 2018. He does the Legends of Wrestling shows. He's just the backstage. He organizes the advertising, organizes the event, just an event organizer. He used to work for WWE. Very well liked and respected. He organizes and runs all of Jim Ross's signings and also his, you know, one-man show, stand-up shows that he does. So they let him go, which is probably almost definitely a way of saving money. You know, the referees that you are used to are gone in favor of local guys wherever they tape, and they're using somebody on the payroll to do the ring announcing. And you know, I think the advantage, you go back to the WWE farm system, the advantage that they're going to be offering once guys like that are on contract to get guarantees, like Lashley and EC3 and a few others are done, Eddie Edwards. Don't know if those guys are going to sign for nightly deals. Some might, some may not. But I think what's going to happen is they're in a unique position to where they have worldwide TV, and they're now going to let people use their gimmicks that they either create on Impact or that they bring into with them into Impact Wrestling. They're going to allow them to use them anywhere they want, quite frankly. As you can see, they've dropped any opposition to the broken, woken Matt Hardy stuff, and that's going full swing in the WWE. They originally were going to try to get the rights, the Hardys, and do it from the get-go, but it got held up because Impact was fighting that. They're no longer fighting that. So according to Ed Nordholm, their wrestlers are going to be allowed to profit from that. So as a perfect example, Lauren Van Ness. Lauren Van Ness, you know, that name has sort of stuck, and the gimmick has sort of stuck. But before, while she was able to use that name on indie shows, she wasn't able to use that name, say, if WWE hired her, or NXT hired her, or anything that was on iPay-per-view, or, you know, Internet pay-per-view, or if a Ring of Honor wanted to use her. Well, they're going to let people use the names that they are on Impact Wrestling, wherever they want, even if they want to go to WWE with them. So it's a unique opportunity for somebody who's an up-and-comer in this business, somebody who maybe has left WWE, maybe like an Adam Rose, Freddy Krueger, Ray Krueger type character, to be able to maybe go back and get a little paycheck and get their name out there again and be able to use the name, because the disadvantage always was you couldn't use that name. You had to come up with something different. So I guess if they're going to really do what they say they're going to do, I guess EC3 could walk into NXT or Monday Night Raw with the name EC3 and the same gimmick. That was something that was never allowed in any promotion. I don't believe that even Ring of Honor allows that. So that's an advantage to somebody who's trying to make a name for themselves. So for a lesser nightly guarantee and a chance to be on worldwide television, you have an opportunity to you know, create something. You know, maybe the LAX guys go to Ring of Honor after they're done with Impact Wrestling as LAX, Ortiz and the other kid. And So, you know, they're offering something unique, and it's going to be different. And but they're going to run it as a business. And I think that two of the brightest minds in professional wrestling right now, Don Callis and Scott, I don't know Don at all, but Scott, who I know going back to when, he'll kill me for saying this, but he used to give me a booking fee to book him as an enhancement guy on WCW. Oh, geez, I'll never work there again now. you know, I didn't charge him as much as I charged. I gave him a discount. So, but yeah, one of the brightest minds in the business. So they're in good hands as far as that goes. There's a commitment to keep the ball rolling and not go out of business anytime soon. But they're going to have to scale down a lot. And you've already seen a lot of that. And I'm sure there will be more of that. And that's just part of what you have to do to survive. And probably, quite frankly, if I'm being honest, should have been done 3 years ago and they wouldn't have been in this position. But it wasn't, and they are. But I won't be there, but I'll be there, and my heart will be there because I have a soft spot for the company. I like the talent. I like Keith Mitchell, who's still there, is in charge of production, who's a longtime friend, and hope to get him on the show one of these days. Sort of show was created for somebody like Keith Mitchell. And he knows that, and we'll work on that. But yeah, that's Impact, and Scott Dimmore will be on sooner than later. He did a couple other podcasts and that he was obligated to do, and then said, "Give us a chance to get this thing rolling, and then I'll come back on and sit ringside with you." So we appreciate that, and we wish them nothing but the best. So, what other tidbits do you have there?
Well, let me
goods
kind of
guru.
let me pick your brain on this here for a second, because I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there who may not know exactly when it comes to this specific topic, Impact wrestlers being able to use their gimmicks elsewhere. How does this work, or how did it work? I know I always wondered when a guy would go from, let's say, WWE to WCW. Perfect example: IRS, Mike Rotunda. He had to be Michael Wall Street, which it was close, but it wasn't the same. Or you had John Tenta, who was, from everything I heard, a fabulous guy. Went
fantastic
from the Earthquake
person
to, unfortunately, having to be like the Shark. But guys like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage stayed Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. So from your experiences, can you tell me a little bit of why certain guys were able to go ahead and be the same person, and why were some people needing to change?
It has to do with if you were that a certain gimmick before you came in, or if that was your real name. So obviously, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage's were not their real name, but they were Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage when they came in to WWF at the time. So they were able to keep. They're also huge stars. Not to say that John Tenta wasn't, but you know, you're also able to call your own shots. But mostly, the deal was that if you came into a territory, into a company, and they created a gimmick for you and trademarked it, that you could not use that gimmick outside of that company. Sort of, you could play with it on indie shows, you know, formerly known as, or change a vowel here, you know, kind of thing. But and nobody really cared. You weren't supposed to, but nobody really cared. It was an indie show. But the advent of iPay-per-views and that kind of stuff, and you know, Lucha Underground. I'll give you a perfect example. Lucha Underground created a bunch of gimmicks for guys and trademarked them. And Era Lucha just did a Ron and Don Harris, along with Conan and Vince Russo, the man. I like to think that I have 9 lives in this business. Vince has 109. But Vince Russo involved in Era Lucha, and Hurricane Helms, who we hope to have on the show soon, involved. And I wish them nothing but the best, but they had a fantastic taping, I heard, for a new Lucha product at the fairgrounds in Nashville, where TNA used to tape originally when they first started out. And some of the Lucha Underground guys cannot use those names or gimmicks. They had to use a variation or their real names or a different name. So, you know, it's the reason why Johnny Morrison is Johnny Nitro in Impact, and I think they called him by his real name in Era Lucha, John Hennigan. But you know, they can't use that name. So that's usually what it is. But the cool thing about what Impact's doing, and not, you know, trying to kiss their ass too much, but it is a cool thing that they're doing, is allowing guys to get over and then take the name to other places you normally wouldn't be able to take it. So it sounds like an interesting idea for a company that's obviously struggling to keep things going, and they're offering an opportunity that's never really been offered in since the territory days, where, you know, back in the territory days, if a booker created a character and it got over, you could take it to other territories. Nobody ever thought about trademarking it until WWE came along, WWF came along in the mid-80s, and the whole wrestling world as we know changed.
Another thing I was kind of gazing over here on the internet this week, I thought it was really interesting, kind of switching gears, is Jim Ross recently did an interview. He actually did several different interviews, but he did one with SI, and he was basically kind of talking about how he believes, in his opinion, he would be shocked if Hulk Hogan was not a part of WWE in 2018. I want to kind of get your opinion and your thoughts about this, because I know you and I, even off air, have kind of talked about brand and obviously, you know, public perception, being a publicly traded company, being in the world of PC nowadays, how things like this just don't fly anymore. I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you think, obviously, enough time has passed? Do you think something? Now, he even alludes to, he has no insider information on this. It's just his gut feeling. What are your takes on this?
I think Hulk deserves to be back where it all started. I think that it would be, I think the time is right. I saw that Jim Ross put something on Twitter about that. And of course, all the PC Twitter, you know, all the people that love Jim Ross and buy his book and go to his shows, all of a sudden they are horrified that the guy stuck up for somebody that they consider a horrible human being, because God darn, he made a mistake. I'm just going to say this, and if I'm going to cause problems, then so be it. But, and I know we don't talk a lot about this, but you know what? The guy, if making a mistake and saying something when you're at your worst possible moment that you regret is make somebody a racist or somebody a bad person, then we're all bad people, because we all say bad things, and because life's not black and white. And I, you know, I try to stay away from these arguments on Twitter, and it takes everything I have not to jump in. And I've jumped in a couple of times recently on the Harris brothers and defending them, and on Chris Jericho and his crews, defending that it's not sexist to say that there's going to be girls in bikinis on a Caribbean cruise. That kind of goes with the territory.
Wait a minute. They don't wear bikini? They don't wear swimsuits on a cruise?
Yeah. But imagine that. How horrifying that is to women all over, that you go on a cruise and you wear a bathing suit. And even more horrible that guys actually like watching women in bathing suits.
All right. Now we've gone too far. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
So I saw all these people turn on Jim Ross on a dime, because this guy at his worst moment said a horrible thing. What he said is a horrible thing. Hulk would tell you it was a horrible thing. I've seen Hulk in where he was drunk. I've seen Hulk where he was, just where there was nobody there. And he's never said that word. He's never shown to be, racist in any way. And, you know, my Hulk Hogan's best friend? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. Have I been around Hulk Hogan at times where, he could have said things? Yes, absolutely, 100%, multiple times, many times. You could count on two hands and two hands and 2 feet and your hands and your feet. And the guy's never shown any indication. And so, you can't send a guy to Siberia for making a mistake. I'm sorry. The internet and the social media, especially on Twitter. And I love interacting on Twitter and answering questions and talking to people. And I really do. I'm not just saying that. I think it's a great forum. But you know, these people that think that see that the world in just black and white. You're either a good person or a bad person, and you know, you're either racist or you're not racist, and you're either somebody who doesn't respect women, or you're somebody who respects women. You know, there's all kinds of shades of gray in life, folks. So, you know, let's not move on. And I think Hulk Hogan deserves every opportunity to do anything that he'd like to do. There is a PC culture. We understand that. That's part of 2017, 2018. It is a publicly traded company. There are guys who have done worse that have been brought back. And my opinion is that Hulk Hogan, if he wants to be, should be able to come back as a Goodwill ambassador when he wants to and when they want him to WWE. And I hope he gets that opportunity. I agree 100% with Jim Ross. And it took every bit of fiber in my fingers on my keyboard to not chime in on that one when people were beating up JR over defending Hulk Hogan. So
yeah, it's interesting.
I'm done with my soapbox. It is what it is.
He has some interesting quotes here, and I'll just kind of go over it real quick. It says, "The world has an interesting way of forgiving others. The guy paid his price. He had a trial. He lost jobs. He had a court case. I don't know what more he needs to do," Ross says. "And why are we his judge and jury? It seems right. Arguably one of the greatest alums of the WWE and one of the most recognizable global entities should have his presence felt in the WWE in the same way." And he goes down a little bit later in the interview and he says, you know, if it were me, I would encourage, you know, obviously I would support, you know, him coming back to the company. I agree. I feel like in a lot of ways that the average person sees celebrities and they feel like they need to be held to a different standard because they're either on television or in the movies. But at the end of the day, I think you alluded to it before, we're all just people. I mean, I have screwed up so many times before. If anybody were to see me
you almost wore a robe to your wedding, but let's not digress.
I almost had a wedding / divorce within 24 hours, yeah, but there you go. But no, I mean, there's a lot of things that we all do we're not necessarily proud of, but you know what? He's right. And we're not here to throw any stones at somebody. So I think it would be interesting. What do you put it at percentage-wise, seeing him in some capacity with the company?
I'd say 75, but it's just a guess. But here's the wonderful thing about this country. And no matter how hard and how PC you want to get, you're never going to be able to take this away. Well, I hope they never take this away, or else I'll be doing a podcast on a totally different subject and probably have more listeners than I do for this one. But there's a wonderful thing. If you were offended by what Hulk Hogan said, and everybody should have been offended by what Hulk Hogan said, it was an offensive thing to say. And if you cannot forgive him and you believe that that is the true Hulk Hogan, and if the WWE decides or any wrestling company decides that they want to bring that person back because that person is forgiven and paid their dues and is owed another opportunity, another chance in life, the wonderful thing is if you find that to be offensive, you don't have to go.
Right.
You don't have to watch. You don't have to buy a ticket. You
yes.
could protest. You could go out front the arena with a poster and protest. You could get on your Twitter and your Facebook and you could protest. You could start a petition. That's the wonderful thing about this country that people don't realize is nobody's forcing anybody to do anything they don't want to do. It's a free country. It's free enterprise. And if WWE thinks that they want to bring him back, and that it's the right time. And if somebody's offended by that, they could turn off the TV and not buy a ticket. And that's the end of it. Again, mm-hmm. they could even protest. And that's what makes this country wonderful. And I'm not trying to take away anybody's ability to have their own opinion. If somebody was so offended by that, that they can never forgive him. I understand that. I get it. Maybe they don't know the real Hulk Hogan. Maybe they don't believe it was just a one-time thing. I get it. They have that right. But doesn't mean that the guy has to be blackballed for the rest of his career and the rest of his life. People, like we said earlier, people make mistakes. As long as they don't break the law, then they are entitled to be forgiven in the court of public opinion. And if you choose not to forgive that person, or you can't forgive the company for bringing him back, then you could protest. You could not go. You could pick it. You could start a petition. And I encourage people to do it. That's the one wonderful thing about this country. Okay, I said I was off my soapbox, and then I got back on.
You stepped back on it. Yep. No, but I mean, I agree with you. If Jerry's you don't like going, it, just
giving,
don't
Jerry, Jerry's giving me the cut sign, like you're waving too into. Look, everybody that listens to this podcast, everybody that downloads this podcast, that subscribes to this podcast, I have the utmost respect for them, and I appreciate the fact that they care about what I have to say or what my guests have to say, what you have to say. It's humbling. You know, when we first thought about doing this, you know, I had no idea what to expect. And, you know, so far it's been, you know, fun, not only a fun thing to do, and it's been informing, I think, to a lot of people, some of the interviews that we've done. Informative, but you know, it's not doing bad. You know, we're holding our own, knock on wood. But and I'm not trying to run anybody off. You know, I would rather have a discussion on social media, just one-on-one, a friendly discussion. There doesn't have to be, you know, F-bombs dropped, and there doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be nasty. A friendly discussion about anything. Not everybody agrees with everybody else. It's what makes this a beautiful place to live. So I'm not, I just want to make it clear. I'm not trying to offend anybody. There's certain people that I know are good people at heart. And there, you know what? There's certain people I know are bad people at heart. And I don't know that I'm going to out those people, but I'm not going to defend those people. So if I defend a Ron and Don Harris, and if I defend a Chris Jericho, or if I defend a JR about Hulk Hogan, it's because I believe that I know those people well enough to be able to say that what you're saying about them, while they might have made mistakes or might have said the wrong thing, they're not the people that you're making them out to be, in my opinion. And when you travel with people and you see them at their worst, and you see them at their best, and you see them when they're in a good mood, you see them when they're in a bad mood, you see them when they found out they're having a baby, and you see them when their wife left them, you know, and if you see those people and there aren't red flags going off that you're not a good person. And there are a lot of people out there in the wrestling business that aren't good people, but the ones that I'm hopping on and I'm defending, I believe in my heart, are good people. Some of them have made mistakes. I'd love to be able to ask the Harris brothers why they got the tattoos that they got. I think it's a biker thing, quite frankly, not to bring that whole thing up, but they have always treated me as a Jewish person with the utmost respect, and nothing less. And so what is said about them a lot of times on Twitter, I find to be not the person that I've got, people that I've gotten to know. And, you know, like I said, you see them at people at their best, and you see them at their worst. You see them when they're inebriated, and you see them when they're sober. And, you know, when they're inebriated or they're in a bad mood, the worst of people come out. And, you know, I could tell you that Ron and Don Harris, no matter what tattoos they have on their body, are not bad people, are love everybody, are happy-go-lucky, fun-loving guys who've always treated me and my wife with the most respect. And I wish their promotion, Arrow Lucha, a ton of success. And I'd love to have them on my podcast to let them share their side of the story. I did reach out to them, and they got nothing to say right now. And anything they really say is not going to change anybody's opinion, so why even go there? So,
you know,
kind of, we weren't planning on talking about that, but I got off on a tangent. So forgive me, folks. Forgive me. We'll have a guest and an interview, and we'll tell road stories very soon. I promise you. We're not done with that. We're only just beginning, and we're working to get even bigger and better guests for you moving down the road. But we thought we'd take an episode and just shoot the shit a little bit about the wrestling business and see how it turns out. You can't ever take a step forward unless you take a risk. So,
and it's kind of interesting. You talked about, you know, seeing people at their best and seeing people at their worst. I mean, I think, and you and I have talked about this a lot, even before we even started the podcast, that who would know a lot of these people better than the people that worked with them and traveled with them for years? And that's why, you know, if I ever see something online or I read something and it sounds a little just too bashing somebody, and that's when I'll go to Dave and I'll be like, hey, what are your thoughts on this? Or, you know, and we've had tons of conversations about all different kinds of things. So I think a lot of times people are very knee-jerk to pass judgment on people without knowing all the facts. But one little piece of advice someone gave me, gosh, this was about a year ago, you are only one Instagram, picture or video away from being in the doghouse yourself. So just keep that in mind that, you know, you're going after people for things that they have done. Trust me, it can happen to you just as quickly. And that's just life. But
let's be perfectly clear. There are people that I have worked with in the wrestling business that are not good people. There are people that have racist views. I'm not going to name names. That's not what the show's about. There are people that that treat women like crap. There are people that are just not good-hearted people. And I'm not going to defend those people in any way, shape, or form. I'm also not going to bury them. That's not my place. But so I'm not saying everybody's perfect, rah, 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 shish, boom, bah. What I'm saying is the experiences that I've had, the people that I have defended on social media, and on Twitter, those people are good-hearted people who either got a stupid biker tattoo or said a horrible thing at a down moment in their life. Or for Jericho's on Jericho's thing, I don't even think he said anything wrong. He said there's going to be bathing suits on a cruise,
right?
So that would be that. And what other tidbits do we have out there? What did you think of the Woken Matt Hardy Bray Wyatt deal? I talked about it a little bit on the open of last week's show about how I thought it was great. They did it the same thing again. I don't know how many. I'm still entertained by it. I don't know how many times they could keep doing that back to back on tape without it getting old. So I hope that they don't. I hope that they move it forward and do some live stuff. But what was your take on it? Because I thought it was genius.
I loved it. I mean, I've always liked Bray Wyatt. I always thought Bray Wyatt was the type of guy who he had a unique look. He wasn't that chiseled body type guy. He did, you know, really, I felt like he slid right into that character really easily. And as we've talked about, you know, when a character is close to who you are as a person, then that's when you're going to find the most success. He is entertaining as all get out. Love his gimmick. And then when you combine him with Matt Hardy, and Matt's got that wild look in his eye and he's not quite looking at the camera and he just starts talking and he's got that big grin on his face. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. And I think you said before, if you didn't smile or crack a chuckle at something like that, then you don't get it, because it was, I will agree with you, one of the best segments I've seen in a long time, and they played off each other really well. And, it was great. I loved it.
And this goes unremembered a lot because, you know, we live in this news cycle of people forget everything within 24 hours. And, because there's something else that's happened. But, go back. I challenge anybody to go back and see when they turned Bray Wyatt babyface. It only lasted one match because he got hurt in that match. And then when he came back, he was the heel again. But for one match, I believed he teamed with John Cena, in the main event of Monday Night Raw, and go back and listen to the pop when he got the hot tag in that match. That guy has the potential to be a hugely over babyface if and when they turn him again. But just if you got 5 minutes and you got nothing to do, go back and listen to the pop, one of the bigger pops that you'll ever hear on a hot tag in wrestling in this day and age. He was hulking up, so to speak, on the ring apron. And when he finally tagged in, he did great babyface. He has potential to be a great babyface. So just as a little homework, if you are in the mood, you could go back and watch that and remember what an opportunity that was that unfortunately went nowhere because he got injured in that match. But well, yeah, I'm looking forward to the to how they do this, but they can't do too much more of what they did the last 2 weeks, or else they're going to kill the gimmick before it starts. And unfortunately, sometimes WWE has a history of doing that. They did that with Dolph. Did we ever get a payoff on the Dolph Ziggler gimmick of coming out to different people's entrances?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. That's our next topic we're going to go into here, is going to be Dolph Ziggler. But really quick here, before we finish up on Bray Wyatt, at the SmackDown that I was at, the Wyatt family is obviously a new tag team. And I had not been, and man, this is sad to say, but as much as a wrestling fan as I have, I've never been as close as I was at this SmackDown. And the two guys are from the Wyatt family. They're monstrous. I mean, they're huge. I have never seen two guys look bigger than that. And I'm sure that Brock Lesnar and obviously Big Show would even dwarf those guys. But just the immensity of some of these wrestlers is, it's hard to fathom a human being that big.
They're big guys and they could do some cool stuff. I mean, they're
my God. They are
not,
so agile.
You know, Big Show, like big guys who can't move around. Those guys could do some good stuff and some athletic. Not to say that Big Show's not an athletic guy, but he's just a big guy and he's his body's beat up, so he can't do the things that he was able to do when he was young. But those guys could go.
Oh my God, they were so fast and quick and agile, and I was looking at him like, "You got to be kidding me!"
Could you tell I don't want to get heat with the Big Show?
I wouldn't want to get heat with the Big Show.
Dude, that's one guy you do not want heat with. Good guy, though. Paul White is a great guy, and I always love, I might have mentioned this in the earlier episode, but the guy puts a cigarette in his hand, and it looks like he's holding a toothpick, and the guy puts a beer bottle in his hand, and it looks like he's holding one of those mini, airplane bottles. The guy has huge, huge appendages. Hands and feet. And, I would certainly want to stay on the right side of Paul White for sure.
Well, speaking of Paul White, just really quick here, and this is not going to get any heat with him, but would you say, looking at his career, obviously now that it's winding down, I think we can say that safely, would you say he had better matches in WCW or in WWE?
Probably WWE. He was more seasoned. I mean, the guy literally had only had a few matches when he became the Giant. Remember we were in Chicago, I believe. They brought him in, and somebody was managing him at the time and trying to, get him in. And they saw him, and they said, pretty much on the spot, we're going to call him the Giant, and he's going to be Andre's son to play off the feud with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant for WrestleMania 3. And they pretty much threw him in the ring and protected him for a while, until he was able to learn a little bit more about the business. And so, I mean, the guy literally got thrown in there as a greenhorn and, got a huge push. So I would say that probably WWE, only because, like I said, he was able to become much more seasoned when he went there and learned their style of wrestling. And he's had some good matches with Braun Strowman, even in the later parts of his career. He's had been some good stuff. So the guy could still go, but, injuries take their toll, especially when you're that big a guy. And he looks fantastic. Last time I saw him, he looks as skinny as the first time I ever saw him in Chicago. So
I just remember seeing him doing drop kicks, and he came off the top rope a couple times in WCW, and I was
he could do a moonsault, apparently. I never saw it.
Holy shit.
But I was like, why wouldn't they, when I was riding with Kevin Sullivan, Kevin was booking him, and I'd say, why wouldn't you do a moonsault? Have him do a moonsault. And he'd say, Panzer, he's the Giant. You don't want giants doing moonsaults. And I, you got to learn the psychology of the business. You don't want giants doing moonsaults. And I'm like, but it would be so cool visually to see this big guy doing a moonsault. And not to mention, he'd probably kill the guy he landed on. They never let him. They protected him. And now that I know a little bit more about what I know a little bit more about, probably Kevin was right. But it's still, I'm going to stick to the fact that it still would have been a cool visual if not for one time.
I never told you that I had a weird run-in with the Big Show, the Giant, when I was actually in Tampa. Gosh, I was probably about, 12, 13 years old. We were at a Baskin-Robbins, me and my mom, my dad, my sister. And we were in there, and I was just looking at the ice cream.
I don't want to interrupt you, but you know those in Baskin-Robbins, you know when you get a sample and they have those little spoons?
The little spoons?
Yeah. And you ask for a sample, they have those little plastic spoons, and they tiny spoons, and they give you a sample of one of the flavors. You know what I'm talking about?
No, are you kidding me? Yes, I completely. Are you a fan of the spoons?
No, but I can't even imagine what that tiny spoon would look like if the Big Show was holding it.
Oh, my God.
Because like a regular spoon, that a normal spoon would look like a Baskin-Robbins sample spoon if the Big Show held it. So I can't even. Are you going to tell me that the Big Show is in Baskin-Robbins? Because I can't imagine him with a sample spoon. They'd have to give him a real spoon and make an exception.
I would imagine they'd have to give him a ladle. But so here's the story, and I'll make this one quicker than I did with the Chicago story. So we're in there and I'm looking at the flavors or whatever, and
33, right?
What's that?
33 flavors?
32 or 33. I think it's 33. What is Baskin-Robbins? Is it 33?
It's 30 something. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm looking at them and I think I said something. I smarted off in there. I said,
imagine that.
Yeah. I smarted off. I said something to my dad, like, yeah, whatever, you know. And my dad didn't put up with much, but I don't know. I just pushed the limits. And anyway, I kid you not, I heard this voice from behind my dad say, I've got this. And I'm not even paying attention because I'm looking at the ice cream. Dude puts his hand on my shoulder. I turn around. He goes, don't talk to your father like that. And I swear to God, I looked up and I didn't know what to say. I couldn't say anything. I mean, not because I was awestruck, but I was scared to death. And the next part of this story was my dad loved it. He loved it. But maybe you can confirm this. Did he ever drive a Miata, a Mazda Miata? It looked like a Miata that he got into with his, I guess, at that time, girlfriend. But because my dad was like, how in the hell does a guy like that get into a car that small? But yeah, anyway.
I don't know what kind of car he drove in Tampa. We didn't live here at the same time, but I didn't know you lived in Tampa. How long did you live in Tampa for?
No, we had my dad's business partner had timeshare, and he would always my dad did a lot of business, and he was like, "Hey, come on down." So we would go down there and I'd play golf at Largo Municipal Golf Course all the time, and oh my gosh, we would eat down at.
Now, were you a wrestling fan? Did you realize Bills. Who he was?
Oh, I knew exactly who he was, but I mean, it wasn't like someone just walked up to me like a normal size of my dad. I mean, this guy was a skyscraper, so I couldn't be like, "Oh, hey, such and such." I was more worried about.
Did you ask him for his autograph once you calmed down?
I didn't say anything, Dave. Literally, my voice was just gone. I feared for my life, but good God, I was a big pile of goo. I was, you know, a tubby 12-year-old. I looked like Chunk from Goonies until God, almost my senior year in high school. Anyway, long story short, but yeah, that was my run-in with a Big Show. That was crazy, 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 crazy. Oddly enough, that was the I believe that was the same year.
By the way, that was a much more entertaining, nothing against Trademark MMA, but that was a much better, more interesting story than meeting him at a German festival and you didn't even buy him a beer.
Yeah, is that kind of make me kind of douchey for not buying him a beer or not offering him?
You should at least offer, yeah, you really should have.
Oh, God. All right, so if anybody else any happens to run up to me or meet me or for whatever chance, I will get you something. I will make up for that. So anyway. That's the Big Show stuff. Now, speaking of the Dolph Ziggler stuff that you and I were talking about before, you just said, did we ever get a payoff on all that? Well, as you and probably a lot of listeners have found out, that Dolph Ziggler recently did an interview about his frustrations with his place in WWE. Did you hear or did you read about any of this?
I did not.
Well, Dolph has actually kind of opened up. He was on... and I hope I say this right, the E&C podcast of awesomeness. Edging Christian.
Sure.
And he basically kind of talked about how he is frustrated. You know, I'm not going to go through the whole quotes, but he basically says, you know, God, you know, you're a world champion and, you know, it's one thing to get hot for a while, but then you cool off real fast. And he goes, they never really went with it. You know, they kind of just let it go after a while. And now he basically was saying how he feels like he's just basically getting guys over who are coming up from NXT. He's just the putover guy. And he's getting a little tired of that. Let me ask you this question from working on the inside. How does WWE allow someone to do an interview about his frustrations?
They don't really. They probably, there was probably an interesting conversation the next week, or they just blew it off and figured that they don't have plans for him anyway, so let him blow off steam. I don't think that you're supposed to do that.
Right.
You know, talk bad about the company when you're employed by the company. I don't think he cares. He might be in I'm trying to get myself fired mode.
Right.
You know, I'm surprised that Edge and Christian went along with it. But then again, they're both never have to work another day in their life if they don't want to. So, none of them, if Dolph saved his money, then none of them, probably are worrying about losing a gig. But did they ever pay that off?
No. No.
I wonder what the original payoff was going to be.
You mean when he ran through all the gimmicks of Shawn Michaels and then he came out to all that? No. No.
Well, I mean, he did a good job with it, but, you know, you got to pay the people off at some point. Or, you know, look, he has a choice to make. There's a lot of guys who weren't happy with the push who left the company and who have come back with a lot better spots. So he might have to do that and maybe get over in Japan or, you know, get over in Ring of Honor if he's willing to take a pay cut to be able to come back with a push. From what I hear, Pat Patterson loves him. I mean, loves him, thinks he's one of the most talented guys in the business right now. And from what I hear, Vince and some of the others just don't see it. They don't have that belief in him. So if they don't see it, it's not going to happen. And if it's not going to happen and he's not happy just doing what he's doing, then probably when his contract's up, he should go see if he could do some other stuff. I'm sure that he could get booked. You know, I'm sure he can make a ton of money on the indie scene. Again, he can't use the name Dolph Ziggler, so it'd be interesting to see what name he uses. But he could, you know, I think a lot of the guys that are big names who leave their first at least 6 months on the indie scene, they make double what they made the year before in WWE. You know, because say Dolph Ziggler leaves and gets an indie gig and they pay him $3,000. I'm just, you know, that'd probably be the going rate. So, you know, $3,000 doesn't suck for a match, but then don't forget he could sell his pictures and his gimmicks, and that's all cash money. And, you know, if you sell your autograph photos or an autograph or a photo opportunity for $20 or $25 or $30, 100 people come through and get that, 200 people come through and get that, do the math. And a lot of times at these indie shows, unless they're big indie companies, they're allowed to keep that money. That's extra money in their pocket. So you could easily walk out with 10 grand in your pocket. You do that on a Friday and a Saturday, and all of a sudden, life's not too sucky anymore. And you could do things at your own, speed and, don't have to listen to anybody else and be your own boss for a while. So, anybody who gets one good run in WWE could at least, get a good run on the indies for a while. And, so I would, somebody pay him huge money to do a shoot interview and then, 3 years later, we'll have him on Sitting Ringside.
What I thought was interesting about this situation with Dolph, and I love watching, a lot of the interviews and a lot of the shoot stuff that is on Great North Wrestling. And they had one with Al Snow. And I was watching this a few nights ago, and it was interesting because Al was talking about getting fired or leaving or whatever from a territory is not the worst thing in the world, you know, and because when there used to be the territories, didn't it used to be a situation like this where if Dolph was either frustrated or the promotion found that it really didn't have anything for him, he could go away for a while and work some other territories. And then obviously when enough time has passed, he could come back and obviously have another run. Do you think this would be a situation that would work for him? Meaning maybe I'll go to New Japan or I'll go to Ring of Honor and then come back again? Or do you think if Vince is not high on somebody, that may just be the be all end all?
It really depends. I mean, I probably think when Cody walked out, Vince said, looked at Triple H and probably said, he'll be back. And I don't think he's going back. I could be wrong, but no time soon. He's made his mark. He's having fun. They're a little group that they got are selling t-shirts and Hot Topic, the top selling t-shirts and Hot Topic. And, hell, Jericho just got involved and has his own t-shirt debuting in Hot Topic with the Kenny Omega deal that I thought was really good, by the way. I love that angle. Did you see that angle?
I did. I saw that when Kenny got done with his match. And
that's,
then obviously
that goes to show you that if you have the right audience and you do it the right way, it doesn't need to be anything fancy. Good old school stuff. You sneak up on him from behind. You hit him with the belt. You get color. You beat the hell out of him. His friend comes to save him. You beat up his friend who's retired and the announcer, and then you do a promo saying that it's going to be a fight, not a, you know, you shoot a little bit. We're not looking to, you know, they did promos. We're not looking at doing a 5-star match. We're looking at having a fight because we don't like each other and. It's really not that hard if the right people, if the guys are over and the scenario's right, it's not difficult to get an angle over. Sometimes simple and simplistic is the easiest way to go. But the key is the guys have to be over. Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega's over, and obviously in New Japan, and Chris Jericho's over in the entire wrestling business. So, you know, you got the right players and a dream match scenario, and you do an angle like that where nobody in the world thinks Chris Jericho is going to be in Japan. And you know, it takes the wrestling world by fire. God bless him. And Chris has always been able to do that. Chris is the master at being able to come up with ways. One of the favorite things I think I ever saw Chris do, and we were texting about it right after it happened, was, and he came back after a while in WWE and came out and I don't think he cut a promo for like the first month he was there. He would just stand in the ring and the crowd would react, and he'd make different faces and the crowd would react. And that was all his idea. That was his idea to do. And he's a very extremely creative guy, and talk about somebody who could find different ways to recreate themselves. He's my friend, but mad respect for Chris Jericho for what he's able to do inside and outside WWE. Pretty amazing.
I remember when he was having his feud with Dean Malenko, and the list of holds that he had. God, that was gold.
Yeah, that was. He actually referenced that. We don't really talk on the phone, but we text. He's a texting guy, so we text. Whenever one of us has something to say to the other, and he actually brought that up kind of recently about the list of holds and how that was one of his favorite deals. And, you know, people still remember him bringing me the tuxedo and the chair, and then ripping the jacket off and taking the chair and then coming out and apologizing. And that was me. That was, I think I've said this before, that was 90% him, 5% me, and 5% Terry Taylor. There was no Eric Bischoff sign off on that. That was just,
wow.
It was a Saturday night and show. And, I think Dothan, Alabama, it was in Rome, Georgia. And, he had an idea, and we were talking about it driving to the building. He wanted to turn heel, and he said, "Do you have a tux jacket that I could rip?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm actually getting ready to get a new tux." And so it was like perfect. And people still talk about it. It's crazy. So he was even doing it back then. We do hope to get Chris on this podcast at some point. He's a very busy guy and getting ready to go to Japan and do that. But between Japan and his cruise, that actually women are going to be in bikinis and bathing suits on, the horror of that. We hope to get him on and talk to Chris. There's a great story, and I don't want to spoil it, but eventually, if I don't get him on the show, then I will tell it. But a great story about how we both thought we were getting fired. We came into a building earlier talking about something we shouldn't have talked about really early on a house show. And Eric Bischoff was standing there on a payphone, and Eric didn't usually go to the house shows. And what we were talking about, we shouldn't have been talking about. And we both thought for sure we were getting fired. So hopefully we could get him on and tell the story and tell other stories about, you know, he's fun to travel with. There's a little group of people. If I didn't travel with Arn and that group, then I was usually traveling with Jericho and Eddie Guerrero, Chavo sometimes, Bill DeMott, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, which is a whole nother story on how that turned out. But it was some incarnation of that group of guys. So it was usually my writing partners of choice, either Arn and the trainer and Charles Robinson and Rick sometimes, or that group of guys. So can't say I didn't have fun, man. Looking back, thinking about that, here's the choice. Are you going to drive with Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, and Charles Robinson, or are you going to drive with Eddie, some combination of Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Chavo, and Bill DeMott, and Dean Malenko? So those were good times, and I got paid for it, man.
I was just about to say, you got to party with the coolest fraternity ever, and you got paid for it. I mean, that's a win-win right there. I mean, plus all the stories, Jesus.
Well, that's why we try to get these guys on to tell the stories, and we're going to continue to work hard to get on guests to tell their stories and to tell stories. We're trying to get a Public Enemy tribute show, already have Bill DeMott has signed on. Crowbar, formerly known as Crowbar, has signed on, and Chavo Jr. has signed on, and that's what we're working. Chris Jericho, if for some strange reason you're listening to this podcast, you're the tie this all together. We need to get you on and do a Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge tribute show. Two guys I didn't realize how much I missed until I started talking with them about them with Bill DeMott. So great people and different ways, but both great people with great hearts.
All right, I wanted to get your opinion on this because porn has actually infiltrated Sitting Ringside. If you remember a few episodes back.
I didn't do it, I swear.
We not only talked about David's interactions.
Oh, Ron Jeremy?
Ron Jeremy and Angie Everhart, and I don't know who else you had, but
Tracy
as
Lords.
Far as meeting them.
Tracy Lords,
yeah. That's right. Tracy Lords. So
yeah, I just got a picture with Tracy Lords. I didn't know her. I got to hang out a little bit with Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you guys were hanging out at a family restaurant. I mean, once again, not something you'd expect to see, you know, from a porn star. But hey, I guess everybody's got to eat. So wrestling and porn have yet again met up. And interesting little thing I was reading. This was actually by the New York Post. Just came out December the 10th. And I hope that I pronounce these names correctly, because if I don't, I mean, it is what it is. There is a adult film star. Her name is Mia. Oh gosh, Khalifa.
I've read the name. I read it as Khalifa, but I don't know.
Khalifa. It's like okay,
it's gotcha. Like an old Anderson, Ollie Anderson. You know.
Yeah.
You read Asuka. A name, you know. But yeah, Asuka. Yeah. Exactly. You don't know. Yeah. You don't know how it's pronounced, but I think it's Khalifa.
Okay, so I mean, you can phonetically spell it in Google, and you'll pop her up. So, or you'll pop up either way. So here's the story. I guess she actually has a YouTube show that she does, and then she was specifically talking about Ronda Rousey, former UFC fighter, and how she is transitioning into a career of professional wrestling with the WWE. And she went on to say, and this is a quote, "I have no respect for WWE. It's not a real sport. It's embarrassing." And I was kind of like, interesting. And she did not hold back. She went even further. And she said, this is where her career will go to die. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of people out there, not only defending or backing WWE, but I think anybody who's been in the industry will kind of defend this and say, hey, wait a second. I think that's way out of line. You have no idea what you're talking about. Well, an individual that you are very familiar with, Mr. Shane Helms, actually jumped into the conversation.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah.
And
he's a witty guy, man.
Oh my God. I read this and I had tears. I was like, you are the man. I was like, it was perfect. I mean, you know, so he basically said, I'm not going to get upset that a porn star doesn't respect pro wrestling. She's entitled to her opinion. Our bodies take a pounding, and well, so does hers. And come on, I mean, that's just poetic.
Now, was
justice.
There ever any, I saw all this, was there ever any response from her?
Let's see if she said anything else.
I actually have another connection to the porn industry in this podcast, believe it or not.
There's another one?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a guy, he actually wrote me a personal message on Facebook. I'm friends with him on Facebook. And yeah. He used to be an indie wrestler in Florida and an indie manager in Florida. And he's now Moonlights as a porn star in South Florida. But his specialty is getting the hell beat out of him by women. So what? Like really beat out of, you know, like S&M bondage,
right,
kind of stuff.
Right.
So he's a bondage porn. Jerry's Gilp has his hand in his face again. He is. He's friends with me on Facebook. He has. He's a bondage. Can we not talk about this? No, it's not me. I'm too much of a whip. But when I hooked up with him on Facebook, I hadn't talked to him in a while, and he started posting these pictures with women on a porn set, and then, you know, getting the living, you know what, beat out of him, you know, all these marks on his back, you know, the beat marks. And so I reached out to him a personal message, and I'm like, dude, what do you do now? And he's like, I do porn, bondage porn. And I'm like, why would you do something like that? And he's like, because I worked the indie shows as a wrestler. I got beat up and I got paid $20. He goes, I get paid like about 25 times that now to get beat up. If I'm going to get beat up, I might as well get a good payday from it.
Wow.
You can't disagree. You can't argue with
it. No, I'm not going to argue with it. No.
But he reached out on personal message this week. It's funny that you bring it up. And he's starting to download some of the shows, and he's digging the shows. He's enjoying
good.
Them.
So, I mean, so you might start trending in the porn world. You know what I mean? Like David Penzer's a cool dude. You know what I mean?
No. I'm Jewish, man. Ron Jeremy. No. Ron Jeremy is you know, there's only one of Ron Jeremy, and the rest of us we didn't get the good end of that deal.
Oh my God. So. That's all I have as far as the porn thing, and I did have one other thing I wanted to kind of go in here too.
You know what? The bottom line is, if you're going to dish it out, you might as well. This is a double entendre. If you're going to dish it out, you might as well be able to take it. And
oh,
you know,
God.
She dished it out, and her, you know, then Hurricane Holmes, Shane Helms. He's in Malaysia now, if I'm correct, but I'm going to see if we could get him on. Maybe even next week we could talk about this. I might actually let you sit in for the interview because you'll enjoy Shane Helms. We could talk about three count and all that, and about his time in WWE, and we could talk about his response to the Khalifa girl. But I think he was trending over that.
Well, no, I wouldn't surprise. And is it just kind of also ironic? Maybe this is me and I just got the giggles, but Hurricane as well. I mean,
yeah, there's all kinds of double entendres in this.
You
deal,
could
you
have
know?
Fun with this day long.
Yeah, you certainly could. And that's maybe, we'll, you know, like I said, if I could get him on next week or the week after, and we'll play with it. We'll have some fun with Shane Helms, who's one of the the wittier guys in the business.
Now, and I do want to say this though. I do still have my on an interview card that I can whip out. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, you do. And by the way, if you follow Shane Helms on Twitter, you know that he's not in any way opinionated.
Give him a follow, you'll understand and you'll enjoy it.
Oh boy, he's certainly he's second to Jim Cornette in his ranting ability, but
I would almost like to have a debate. Get two guys on and have a debate, maybe about a topic, and just sit back and just watch the sparks fly.
We got to find a good topic.
That's true. Well, my next area, turning pages here, I didn't know if you had heard about this. I did.
Yeah,
and
I
when
hear.
I heard about this, I was really, really excited about this. Now, whether or not this is true or it's just rumor, speculation, whatever you want to call it, Sylvester Stallone has been pretty active on social media, and he's actually teased that.
Is he the last man in Hollywood standing?
He's got to be. I mean, no one has touched him at all, nor he hasn't touched anyone either way. But yeah, he's teasing potential that Brock Lesnar. Yes, I'm going to repeat it again. Brock Lesnar may be in Creed 2, and just to kind of set the storyline up here, what it would be if this actually happened would be obviously Rocky would be training Creed's son, and Brock Lesnar would be playing the role of Dolph Lundgren's son. And obviously that would set up a bout. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you give this any credence? Do you think this has any legs, or you think it's just some fun that he's having on social media?
It would be interesting to do something like that. And I don't know that Brock care, you know, most of the guys would, you know, jump at the chance to do, a Rocky movie. And, you know, that's how Hulk Hogan, you know, got to be a big name. And so most people would jump at the chance to do something like that. But Brock's a unique individual for all intents and purposes. And he'd probably just be happy sitting up at his ranch and hunting and doing the things he likes to do than to go to Hollywood and memorize lines. And I don't know if he'd be very good at doing the Russian accent, although Jerry earlier pointed out, our executive producer, Jerry Pituck, pointed out that they could have Paul Heyman be his spokesperson.
Oh, jeez.
Just say he doesn't speak any English. He just speaks Russian. And it'd be cool. It'd be interesting. It would get the film some buzz. And the, you know, I was a huge Rocky movie fan. I mean, huge. And you know, I remember, now that everybody's lining up now to go see the new Star Wars, and I'm not a Star Wars guy. I saw those first three back in the day, and I haven't seen any of the other ones. But as we tape this, my son is seeing this. He was psyched to see this new Star Wars movie. But my point is that nobody's lining up anymore to see the Rocky movie. So it would be a good way to get people talking about, that movie and get some excitement behind it. But, and by the way, I wanted to go back, talking about Hollywood and who's the last man standing. Has anybody, Jerry, you could pipe in on this too. Has anybody had a quicker fall from grace than Kevin Spacey?
Oh my God.
Has anybody?
No.
I mean, you know that you are finished. You are absolutely done, never to be brought back. When a company spends millions of dollars to take you out and replace you in a movie, I don't even know how they did that. I know they didn't get all the cast, so they must have like done it digitally on a green screen. But All the Money in the World is the movie, and they totally replaced his character, Nelson Rockefeller, or one of the Rockefeller guy, forget who the famous actor is, but like. 2 weeks before the movie came out, they replaced the character in a movie, and they didn't shoot the movie over. They used some sort of, that's heat. That's heat.
That's bad.
Yeah, that's heat, you know. Yeah. So yeah, that's doesn't look too good. But
do you think that like kind of like what they did? I mean, not to try to draw comparisons because this is not in any way a comparison, but I'm saying, would the Academy ever consider rescinding the Academy Award for somebody?
I don't know how that works. I know that the Academy like is pretty much through Harvey Weinstein, stripped him of everything he ever had. I don't know if you could get stripped of a Academy Award. I mean, the guy was a great actor. Let's not, you know, but that doesn't excuse any of that crap. And,
sure.
You know, a lot of people going down, you know, Bill Cosby years, a year before him. And it looks like, who's the music mogul from Atlanta? Russell Simmons.
Is it Russell Simmons?
Russell Simmons, yeah. I went to a Rays game and got really good seats, like right behind the Rays dugout and like front row, and from a friend of mine, and they were playing the Falcons. God. The Atlanta Braves, and he's a big Atlanta guy, Russell Simmons, and he was sitting right next to us, and me and my wife were like, that guy looks familiar, and now he's going to jail. He went from sitting in the front row of the Rays games with the Atlanta Braves jersey on, and he's probably going to jail. So we live in an interesting time, and the news is interesting to watch, but the world is changing, and in this case, it's changing for the good.
Speaking on that topic, I did not know this until recently, but for anybody who watches, you know, the cooking channels, a guy, Chef Mario Batali, actually has kind of fallen under that same inappropriate behavior umbrella. And I remember watching him on TV before too, but it's just so weird, you know, you can never pick these people out. And not to go on a rant on this kind of stuff away from wrestling, but I was reading things online about Matt Lauer, about his office and the button that would make the door lock from the inside.
Yeah, isn't that like, lovely?
What? Matt Lauer? Like, well, I guess at some point in time, you just can't be shocked by anything. You can't. You just can't. But it was just like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Here's what I'm afraid of, though, and I hope it doesn't happen. What I'm afraid of is that it's no longer acceptable to meet somebody, a coworker, and start dating that coworker and fall in love, like, and get married and live happily ever after. I mean, I met my wife working on a cruise ship. She was a coworker. I found her attractive. I asked her out. We went on a date, and 30 years later, she's still here, believe it or not. And and so, you know, that's what I hope doesn't get taken away. We get to the point where you can't ask a coworker out on a date. So, you know, or else I would never met my wife. So, let's obviously there's a lot of people doing a lot of bad stuff and it's totally unacceptable and that doesn't even need to be said, but I'd hate to see it get to the point where you can't even ask somebody, you know, a coworker out on a date because you find that person to be attractive and interesting and smart and funny. And, you know, people have connections sometimes. So, anyway, we got off of wrestling again, but that's okay. And anything else you got?
As far as the world of wrestling, not a whole heck of a lot. Is there anything that was on your mind that you wanted to kind of shoot around or talk about?
It's funny. I talked about Raw at the beginning of last week's podcast before the Dory interview and said how I was digging Raw. And then this week, not so much. I don't write there and I don't book there and I don't know what goes on. And, you know, so I'm not going to be a Monday morning quarterback. So I'm not going to do that, but, certainly I did enjoy, I'll tell you what I did like. I did like the, all the women coming out united against Absolution. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with that unless, because they're going to eventually have to have one of those women turn and join Absolution because the numbers just don't add up. It's like 7-on-3. But I thought that was a good angle. They finally all united, even, even the champion, Alexa Bliss, was with him. And I thought that was good. But other than that, I'm hoping to see a better effort next week because I've been enjoying it. Still like the Jason Jordan, Kurt Angle storyline. That's a little real life, not real life because obviously it's not his real son, but it's a real life situation where the father wants to take care of his kid, but doesn't want to act like he's being one sided or taking sides and doing favors for his kid. So it's always a unique situation, and then to have him be a little kind of sniveling, whoever comes up with the line, I've been in the ring with this guy and 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 held my own with all of them. And I thought this week was interesting where Kurt said, holding your own doesn't mean beating them. And so that's about that. We will be back next week with another edition of Sitting Ringside. We're going to try to see if we could get Shane Helms on since we were discussing him and his feud with the porn star for calling Ronda Rousey out and taking her defense in the defense of the pro wrestling business. But we certainly will be back. Let us know what you think of this episode of, a little bit of wrestling and a lot of wrestling, a little bit of social media, a little bit of world views, a little bit of pop culture, and a little bit of Hollywood. So Mike Freeland and Dave having some fun talking about what's going on. So let us know what you think at Penzer Ringside, at David Penzer and Freeland. What's your handle, as they say?
My Twitter handle is at Mike, capital M, I-K-E.
Why do you say capital? It doesn't have to be capital.
It doesn't. It just, I thought it sounded kind of cool. You know what I mean? Like capital M-I-K-E. I don't know. It's just my thing.
M-I-K-E-F-R-E-L-A-N-D, correct?
Yes, that's it. Okay. It's Mike Freeland.
It doesn't have to be caps. It doesn't have to be bold. Doesn't.
I was trying to sound kind of cool towards the end here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You do that
kinda,
a lot.
I hear the buzzer going off. I got some poppy muffins that I'm making tonight. Pretty excited about that.
Poppy muffins. Don't get a buzz.
Yeah, they're like lemon. I don't know if they call them lemon poppy muffins. Yeah.
Does it give you a buzz? Does it give you
the munch? It does not. No, they're Dolly Madison brand. So
Dolly Madison poppy muffins. Yeah, all right, ladies and gentlemen, the show is over. Until next time, I'm David Penzer. I'm still sitting ringside. We'll see you next time.
Follow David Penzer on Twitter at David Penzer. Also, make sure to follow the show on Twitter at Penzer Ringside. You've been sitting ringside with David Penzer on Radio Influence. Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the Fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxidine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penzer. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.